This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me here in the studio is the show's producer, Carey Jr. II.
Good morning, Stephen. How you doing?
I'm good. How much of Kamala Harris's appearance here in Metro Detroit did you watch yesterday?
You know, I started off watching just her appearance, and then I was like, you know, let me see the whole cast role. That I wanted to see the whole Michigan our politicians show up and see what that was like.
Everyone was there.
Yeah, they really turned out.
Along with 15,000 people in the crowd, which is the largest rally so far here in Michigan during at least this presidential cycle. The enthusiasm for this ticket, at least among Democrats, it's just been really impressive so far.
Yeah, and I was interested to see the rollout the appearance of her vice presidential pick, Tim Walz. So seeing what the Midwestern dad energy was going to be like was interesting. So yeah, definitely a strong pick, I think, and the Democratic Party seemed to be really happy about it.
And, in all of the excitement over this, I think it's kind of easy to lose the idea that Kamala Harris, in a few weeks after the Democratic National Convention, will be only the second woman installed as the top of the ticket for one of the major parties. Hillary Clinton is the other in 2016. And that seems unbelievable, I guess, in 2024, that we've only ever had one other woman do this, and we're about to have the second.
Yeah, and then what's interesting too about her campaign, what I've noticed, is that I don't feel like it's being like thrown into my face. I feel like she's sitting into her role and letting her record speak for itself. Like at her press conference, at her rally, she spoke a lot about the fight and of course, Trump's record and her record and comparing the two. And I feel like that's something that didn't happen as much with Hillary. There was the "I'm with her" slogan. But I also think that there's a reason for that, right? Hillary was the first nominee. Mm-hmm. And so there was a reason to kind of emphasize this historic opportunity. And now on this side, it feels like Kamala Harris is kind of sitting in her resume. And we see her and we know what her background is. And so she's leading with her back.
And of course, she is the vice president of the United States right now.
Exactly.
Literally a heartbeat away from the presidency of Joe Biden were to resign or not be able to serve anymore, she would be president. So it is different. But there is still this lingering issue in our politics about the barriers that exist based on gender, that women still don't have the same kind of opportunities, at least across the board they don't, that men do. And that's what we want to talk about today, and talk about it in light of Kamala Harris, of course, her presence at the top of the ticket and her appearance here in Michigan. What does that mean for the lingering barriers that exist for women?
Yeah, and despite the fact that she may not be leaning into it, it's been pretty evident that her opponents have, being called, you know, the childless cat lady by the vice presidential nominee on the Republican side, other media talking about her being a DEI hire. So even though she may not lean into it, it is definitely going to be something that applies to this race in going forward.
Yeah. So we've got three really good guests today to help us sort this out. Who do we have, Carey?
Well, today we have Ali Vitale. She is a Capitol Hill correspondent for NBC News. She also is the author of the book Electable, Why America Hasn't Put a Woman in the White House Yet. A fitting title for the current moment we're in. We also have Kathy Weininger. She is an associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Western Washington University. And we're also joined by Kimberly Peeler Allen, who is a visiting practitioner at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University.
And of course, we want to hear from listeners today. On the heels of that really energetic rally, what are you thinking about Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee? What are you thinking about the role of women in politics? Mm-hmm. Allie, Kathy, and Kimberly, welcome to Created Equal. Welcome to Michigan.
So thrilled to be here.
Yeah. So, Allie, I'm going to start with you. You and I had a conversation just about a year ago, I think, or maybe a little longer, about this idea of why a woman had not, at that point, been elected president. We may be closer to that today than we were then. I'm really curious, though, about your sense of things now that Kamala Harris seems inevitably headed toward the top of the ticket on the Democratic side this time. How much does this change, I guess, is the question that I'd love to hear from you about.
And I would love to say that I had looked into a crystal ball and predicted that my subtitle would revive itself in this way.
I called it, I described it this morning as prescient. So
yes, and I will take that word where we can get it. But your question is also the same one that I had in the immediate aftermath of Kamala Harris becoming the presumed nominee among party leaders, and then, of course, actually getting the nomination through the virtual roll call fashion that the DNC employed this time. So she will, of course, receive that nomination in a few weeks, as you point out, but she's already hit that metric, that mile marker, to be the second woman. And look, the question I asked, and we reported this on NBCNews.com at the time, was what's changed since Hillary specifically, but also since 2020, where more women ran in a Democratic primary at the same time than ever before. And of course, all of them not only fell short, but they fell short to a man who looked like almost every other president had in the past. And really the answer is that time and the idea of proof of concept, the idea that women can win when they run, just like men can win when they run, that's really important. And so Michigan is actually such an important plot point for Kamala Harris. Politically, yes, of course, Michigan is a battleground state, but also from the perspective of gender and politics, you look up and down the upper echelons of leadership in Michigan. You have, of course, Gretchen Whitmer at the top of that. But then, of course, you have Jocelyn Benson and Dana Nessel.
Yes.
I mean, it's important to look at the fact that Michigan voters are habituated to seeing women run for executive and top leadership roles, and they're used to seeing them win. That muscle memory means that they don't have to imagine what it would look like. They just know what it looks like because they've elected them before. That's an important muscle memory across the country, and it's one that a lot of states don't necessarily have. It's why Kamala Harris still has to combat this so-called imagination barrier or imagination gap for people who don't know what it looks like to have a woman president. But the more women we elect and the more time passes, and the Center for American Women Politics does this so, so well, tracking the pipeline of women who are running and winning, that's all important because it's putting bricks in the road of the way to the White House. Kamala Harris is walking those bricks right now, and she's laying them as she goes, too.
So, Allie, how important is it that Kamala Harris is the vice president of the United States, as we were talking about in the open here? You know, she is literally a heartbeat away, as they say, from the presidency now. She is someone who was elected on a ticket and, you know, is not unfamiliar in that way. Does that change the dynamic dramatically because she is, you know, someone that has already broken a barrier?
Yes, because even though she's the second woman, although the first woman of color to be the Democratic nominee, she is the first female vice president. And that is essential to, again, bridging the imagination barrier, but then also knowing that this woman knows what it's like to be in the Situation Room, to make decisions at high stakes moments, to be in the room with President Biden as a partner, deciding on things from foreign policy to the best way forward on domestic legislative affairs. And as much as Republicans are keen to let her defend the Biden-Harris agenda, I think many Democrats are happy for her to defend that agenda in the same way, because they have a huge body of legislative work. And I know this from scrambling across the Capitol for the first 2 years of the administration. They were doing the work of legislating around infrastructure, around the care economy. Those are essential pieces of this Democratic electoral puzzle. And so for Kamala Harris, not just to have been the vice president, been in the room breaking those barriers, but to have been part of that is really important in the minds of voters and in the minds of, you know, Democratic operatives and strategists that I talk to. who are looking at this utterly whirlwind moment in politics and seeing her come out with the enthusiasm and the joy that you guys were remarking on. And I feel the same as I've been watching these rallies. There is a new energy within Democratic politics. And I think that speaks to both Kamala Harris as the candidate, but then also the issue set meeting her where she is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't undersell the idea that she was the administration's top and best messenger on abortion access, on reproductive health care. And it is one of the issues that can turn the 2024 electorate. I think this is the first presidential test in the post-Roe, post-Dobbs era. Mm-hmm. It is going to tell us a big thing. It's going to tell us a big message. And Michigan, of course, knows the saliency of that issue better than many other states, too.
Yeah, yeah. Kimberly Peeler Allen, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You are a visiting practitioner at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers. But you were formerly the senior advisor to New York State Attorney General Letitia James' re-election campaign in 2022. So you've seen some of these dynamics up close before. I'm really curious what you think about the potential Harris nomination, or maybe the inevitable Harris nomination, and I guess what it says about the gender dynamic that it doesn't seem as much the focus, her gender, as it was for Hillary in 2016.
Well, I think Allie is absolutely right that this is, you know, because she wasn't the first, she really has the opportunity to lean into her resume and her accomplishments as vice president, as senator, as attorney general, and as district attorney. And I think we are seeing, you know, since 2016 and even going back prior to that, the pathway that has been laid, particularly for women of color who have run, in some cases lost, and in some cases won over the last decade or so, increasing the possibilities and showing the electorate the possibilities that do exist for women of color leadership, women's leadership in general. And we have grown the number of women of color in the House of Representatives. One of the other hats that I have worn is a co-founder of Higher Heights for America, which is the nation's leading organization focused on harnessing Black women's political power from the voting booth to elected office. And we have been working very hard to help shift the narrative around what leadership looks like. You know, for 248 years, mm-hmm. we have seen, with the exception of one president, all of them have been white men, and the majority of the elected officials in this country have been men, or white people. And to be able to show that the numbers are changing, the caliber of candidates is changing, the life experience that is being brought to the table because of that diversity actually benefits so many. We're really seeing an electorate that is looking, you know, very deeply at the candidates and beyond just what they feel most comfortable with. And yeah. I think the vice president is definitely benefiting from that in this moment.
Yeah. Does that mean that that the barriers are changing? I mean, we're talking specifically about her and her record and the fact that that kind of lifts her in a way beyond some of this. But does that mean, Kimberly, that those barriers are actually falling for other people, and that that they are not as much a part of the sort of institutional foundation of our politics?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the barriers are the barriers. We are, America is a white patriarchal society. That's how we, our founding fathers, that is what the norm has always been. And racism, sexism, and misogyny continue to be prevalent. And we're seeing, as you stated, that the vice president and the campaign aren't leaning into the diversity of her experience and her identity, but the Republicans are. And we're seeing the increase of violence, threats, and harassment against women and people of color in elected office across the board. And a lot of that is is sparked because of, you know, for lack of better phrasing, their difference from what the norm has been. So I think the barriers are still there. I think we are slowly chipping away at them in bits and pieces along the way. But, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. But I think, you know, with, you know, the advent of Stacey Abrams in 2018 and in 2022, people could see that there is an opportunity for a Black woman to be elected governor, to see, you know, the most diverse cabinet in our country's history. We're seeing women and people of color leading at, you know, in all realms, that it really helps shift the, you know, the vision of what leadership looks like, and how leadership can change the lives, the diversity of leadership can change the lives of so many.
Yeah, yeah. Kathy Weininger, your work explores political representation at the intersection of gender and race and partisanship. So I'm also super curious about your reaction to Kamala Harris and her seemingly unchallenged at this point, place at the top of the Democratic ticket. What does that say about our politics and the history of our politics, and I guess how much of a role it plays?
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. And I completely agree with Ali and Kimberly. I think the landscape has definitely changed since 2016 and even since 2020. Just something to, you know, add to the conversation is that I really think it's important to also give credit to the women of color who ran, in particular in 2018, right, where we saw this spike in representation among women of color. And it's not just that more women of color are running. It's also how they're running, right? Because I think for a long time, there was this narrative that if you want to win, you have to sort of frame yourself as someone who can be electable to a white constituency, right? Or have to, you have to win over men. And so I think a lot of women candidates were pressured to uphold this version of professionalism that we, you know, that is stereotypically white and male. And what we saw in 2018, I think, was a shift in that. We saw women of color running unapologetically as women of color. We saw them running unapologetically as themselves. And I think by doing that, you begin to shift the conversation of not just who can get elected, but what you can bring to the table. Right. And so that's one of the biggest shifts that I think I've seen in the last few elections.
Yeah. And so I guess what does that mean beyond Kamala Harris? I mean, as Ali points out, you know, here in Michigan, we've got women at all in all three statewide elected offices, governor, attorney general, and secretary of state. I mean, that's really far down the road. But when you look at other states and other parts of the country, I guess, what are you seeing in terms of what this change means?
Sure. I mean, I think women are still underrepresented, right? I don't want to paint this like rosy picture that women are adequately represented. I think the biggest factor in women's underrepresentation is getting women to run in the first place, right? And again, Ali and Kimberly, totally right. When we, as gender politics scholars, we always try to push the message that when women run, women win. And that's been true for a long time. So there are barriers to office, but I think getting women to decide to run in the first place is the biggest challenge to overcome. But I think we're seeing that. And this change in political landscape does send a signal to women of color, that, hey, I can run, and I can run as myself, right? I don't need to fit into this stereotype. And that's especially true, I think, on the Democratic side of the aisle. I think it's maybe not as true on the Republican side of the aisle.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation with Ali Vitale of MSNBC News, Kathy Weininger of Western Washington University, and Kimberly Peeler Allen of the Center for Women and Politics at Rutgers University. We want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. What do you make of Kamala Harris being the second woman who is likely to be at least presidential nominee on the Democratic side? What do you make of women in politics? Also, were you at this super energetic rally at Metro Airport here in Detroit yesterday? 15,000 people showing up to see Kamala Harris and Tim Walz for the first time here in Michigan. What do you make of the energy that ticket seems to have? Can it overcome the historic sexism that has prevented us from electing a woman president in our country? 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined us for talking about women in politics in our country. Big day here in Michigan yesterday. Vice President Kamala Harris, who is the presumptive nominee to be the Democratic nominee for president this year, was here with Tim Walz, who's the governor of Minnesota, and her pick to be the vice president. 15,000 folks went out to Metro Airport in the heat, waited a long time to see the two of them. A lot of energy at that rally yesterday. But what does her place at the top of the Democratic ticket really mean for women in politics? How much does it do to kind of take down some of the barriers, the historic barriers that women have faced in our politics? We got three really great guests with us talking about it. Ali Vitale is a Capitol Hill correspondent for NBC News and author of the book Electable, Why America Hasn't Put a Woman in the White House Yet, a book that I would imagine is going to rise up in sales in the next couple of months as we get closer to the election. Kathy Weininger is an associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Western Washington University. She studies political representation at the intersection of gender, race, and partisanship. And Kimberly Peeler Allen is with us. She is a visiting practitioner at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University. Also was the senior advisor to New York State Attorney General Letitia James in her reelection campaign in 2022. We want to hear from you, listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a sense of what you think is going on with gender and politics in our country right now. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. Okay, Ali, Kathy, and Kimberly, before we get to our listeners, I want to talk about the VP pick here for Kamala Harris. And I think what that means to gender politics. Our governor here in Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, was somebody who was, of course, mentioned many times as a potential running mate for Kamala Harris. And I kept saying, well, boy, it would be a real risk to put two women on the ticket, given the historic barriers, right? Given that the way that people might react to that. It would make gender more of the focus of the campaign, and I'm not sure that it made sense to take that kind of gamble. In the end, Kamala Harris picks Tim Walz, who is an older white male from Minnesota, far more prototypical, at least in the demographic sense, of the kind of people we've seen on presidential tickets in the past. So in a way, I kind of feel like maybe this is a sign that things haven't changed all that much that while you have a woman at the top of the ticket, she still has to play some of the gender politics that dominate our political structure. So I when I get the three of you talking about what that means, is this a sign of lingering sexism? Is it a lingering sexism even that I was indulging by saying I didn't think Gretchen Whitmer had a shot at something like this? What do we make of Tim Walz? Who wants to go first?
I'll start. I mean, okay. I'll just say it also struck me that on our network and other networks, when you looked at the graphics of the possible vice presidential contenders, most of them looked the same. And that was on purpose. I mean, I do think that while I try to look at the upshot and the optimistic point of view about reflective governance and where women are in politics right now, the reality of Kamala Harris being at the top of the ticket is that they knew that they needed to find someone who could be a counterbalance to her in many ways, both politically, geographically, and then also in terms of the identity politics and the role that race and gender will play out on the campaign trail. The thing I think of first, and the comparison point that was brought to me first by many operatives that I talked to about this, was this is also the same kind of game that Barack Obama had to play when he chose Joe Biden, yes, who was a graybeard on foreign policy, but who also didn't carry the burden of race, in the words of one of Obama's advisors to me, in the same way that Obama himself did. So Harris is in a familiar place, not just to Obama, but also to Hillary Clinton, who, when I talked to her for my book Electable, I asked her about the prospect of when she was considering Elizabeth Warren as a vice presidential contender and what the output of two women on the ticket would have been. And she called it an upside downside and said it would be energizing and historic, and there were advisors who wanted her to lean into that. But at the same time, she also had the concerns that I know many Democrats have voiced to me, which is that you don't, as much as there is progress right now, there are also people who are reluctant to leaning into that progress in the same kind of energetic way that some Democrats might want them to. Yeah. And so with the Tim Walz pick, there are so many reasons for this, but one of them that really stuck out to me in the reporting was the role of ambition. And I think for people like Kimberly and Kathy and I, who watch the role of gender in politics, back in 2020, Kamala Harris was pegged in a bad way for being ambitious, as if all politicians aren't ambitious in the first place. But the idea that Walz came into the room for their Sunday meetings and basically reportedly said, you know, this is the end of my career, I'm here to amplify you, I'm here to help you win, I mean, that is the role of ambition when you're looking for any vice president shoe. Sure. So I think just turning over the different ways and reasons why Walz ended up being the VP, yes, there are gender and racial aspects to it, but of course, politics and all of the rest of that is so part and parcel to it, too.
Yeah. Kathy or Kimberly, what do you make of Tim Walz here?
I think he was a very strategic choice, and, you know, for all the reasons that Ali laid out. And I think, you know, as we're talking about the upside of having the vice president at the top of the ticket, there is also the you know, counterbalance of that, of if she does not win, what does that mean for other women who want to run? And I think the campaign is very committed, as the vice president has talked about, you know, throughout her career, that her mother, you know, made her commit to the very beginning that you may be the very first to do a lot of things, but make sure you're not the last. I think, you know, the vice president was thinking very strategically about how do I, you know, set this up so that, you know, I am successful and I'm able to, you know, help bring other people along and open the door for other women. And picking Governor Walz, I think, was a very strategic move in that endeavor, that it helps her make sure that there, you know, she will be successful and that people will look at women's leadership in a different way that helps, you know, seed the ground for others. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot at play in all of this. There's, you know, I think there are a lot of conversations about what kind of coattails the vice president will have. What does her being at the top of the ticket mean, and it's, you know, for some, you know, people are concerned that there will be heightened scrutiny on them, you know, even more scrutiny on them as women candidates, because the vice president is a woman, and a misstep by her is seen as, you know, a complete catastrophe for others. So there is that ripple effect that I think every step that the campaign makes, they are also thinking, you know, not just about their own race, but what this means for governance and representative democracy in the future.
Yeah. Kathy, I'm curious about your sense of having, or whether Kamala Harris had to pick a white man to be her running mate, and if that signifies that we haven't moved as far beyond gender politics as maybe we think.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree that it was a strategic decision. I don't know that she would have, you know, made a bad decision by choosing a woman, right? I think that is the box that a lot of people sort of put her in. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, she didn't want to take that risk. But I think that is how we change political landscapes, right? We change political landscapes by challenging the current one. And so I don't necessarily think it was a bad or good decision, right? But I will say that in terms of Governor Walz specifically, I think he's a really fascinating candidate to be vice president in terms of the way that he displays his masculinity, because I think that that is such an interesting conversation in politics today, and especially on the Republican side, right? So political scientists often, we think of the Republican Party as being like masculine, right? Voters conceptualize the Republican Party as this more masculine party. And you see candidates leaning into that, even Republican women candidates kind of leaning into that, right? With Nikki Haley running for president with her, you know, finish them, quote. And so, you know, I think that having Governor Walz, who is someone who is compassionate, empathetic, right, challenges this idea of toxic masculinity, and having him potentially debate J.D. Vance, I think will be a really fascinating way to challenge this concept of masculinity at the highest levels of office. And so the Republican Party is already, you know, putting out hashtags like Tampon Tim, and that is really backfiring, right? The idea that we shouldn't be, you know, advocating for tampons in restrooms, right? Or that we shouldn't be, you know, supporting women's rights, women's reproductive rights, all of that stuff. And I think he is a good candidate to challenge that. I will also just mention that I think the camo hat with the Harris Walz, right, that is very similar to, you know, to Chapel Road hat is fascinating, right? Because it is that, you know, I love the memes that are, you know, the rise of the Midwest princess. And that, I think, also challenges this concept of masculinity, and I think reaches out to younger voters.
Yeah. As well. Okay, we're going to take another quick break here, and we need to let Ali Vitale go. Ali, it was really great to have you back here with us on Create and Equal. I'm so glad you were able to come by.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When we come back, we are going to get to your calls and your social media comments. And if you want to join us, remember, 313-577-1019 is the number here. Call and tell us what you make of Kamala Harris as the second woman to be a major party nominee for president in our country, something that will happen in just a few weeks. What do you make of the role of women and gender in politics? Is it changing? Are the barriers for women in politics falling, and falling in the way that we might imagine that they should be falling in a year like 2024? You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined us. We're talking about women in politics with Kathy Weininger, an associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Western Washington University, and with Kimberly Peeler Allen, who is a visiting practitioner at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. We're also, of course, talking about Kamala Harris, being the presumptive Democratic nominee for president. She was here yesterday at Metro Airport here in Detroit. 15,000 folks showed up in the heat to wait to see her and Tim Walz, her pick to be the vice president of the United States. A lot of energy at that rally, and the buzz on social media and in other places after just went on for hours. We'd love to hear from you, the listeners, about what you think of Kamala Harris's role as the presumptive second woman now to be named to the top of a presidential ticket for a major party in our country, and what you make of the barriers that sit in front of women who would like to be part of politics and government. We've smashed a lot of those barriers here in the state of Michigan. We've got a woman who is governor, a woman who is attorney general, and a woman who is secretary of state. It's the first time those things have happened. What do you think are the barriers that still remain? How do we move them out of the way? 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag us, and we will include you that way. Let's start today with Caitlin in Beverly Hills. Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah. So I just think that I really wonder whether or not Kamala Harris would have won and be the presumptive nominee had the process played out like it normally does. It's kind of a very strange year with how late in the game President Joe Biden left. I'm a supporter. I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris. So it's nothing against her, but I really don't think that her being the presumptive nominee is as indicative of change as maybe we wish it was.
That's a really great question, Caitlin. If there had been an open primary, if, for instance, President Biden had said last fall, hey, I'm not going to seek reelection, and candidates had, you know, raised their hands and raised money and campaign, would Kamala Harris have come out on top? I guess I'm not sure either. Kathy Weininger, I wonder what you make of that. The lack of electoral test that Kamala Harris has faced this time, what does that mean about, I guess, what role would gender have played, I guess, if she had had to face voters?
Yes, I definitely agree. I think this is a great question. And, you know, I wish we had Allie here also to jump in, because this is exactly the question. It's the question of electability, right? And that question really plays out in voters' minds during the primary process. And we know that, especially for presidential elections, voters are deciding not just which candidate is most in line with my values, but they're also deciding which candidate can win. And we know that voters are strategic when they make primary decisions. And that is a barrier that women candidates have historically faced. When you poll voters, oftentimes they will say that, yes, I would love to vote for a woman for president, but they think that other people are not ready to vote for a woman, right? Yeah. And so it's the perception that they're not electable to other people. And, you know, so I think that she definitely would have had an uphill battle in the presidential primary. And that's the same battle that, you know, women presidential candidates have faced historically. And I think it's especially prevalent at the presidential level, where we've never seen a woman actually be elected.
Right.
So Harris is challenging that now, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Kimberly Peeler Allen, you worked on New York State Attorney General Letitia James' reelection campaign in 2022. So you've seen the process play out, the electoral process. Do women face, when they have to face voters, I guess, a different challenge than what Kamala Harris has faced here, which was the simple fact that her boss was, unable to continue in the campaign. Does that change the way we ought to be thinking about this?
Actually, I think it should not, because as in the 3 or 4 weeks leading up to the president's decision, there was so much discussion about, we need to find a candidate. We need to find a candidate, when the vice president was sitting right there.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of the conversation that I was having with people that, we have a candidate. And if it had been a white man who was vice president, there would be no discussion. Mm. It would have just been, okay, it's time for, the vice president to step in. And the fact that people were not talking about that, and actually in some places people were saying, well, nobody's talking about her because nobody thinks she can win, was really, really hurtful to so many who have seen the work that the vice president has done. So when the party came together so quickly after the president made his decision, it was really, for those of us who've been working on getting particularly women of color elected, it was really quite shocking and surprising that they more or less cleared the field. They did clear the field for her instead of, I think the former president and First Lady Obama were both, wanted to let the process kind of play out and see where the chips would fall. But I think it was really kind of unprecedented the way the field was cleared, because that is not generally how it happens for women of color.
Right.
Though through the research that we've done at the Center for American Women in Politics in partnership with Higher Heights for America, we have seen that actually the way that many women of color and Black women specifically ascend to these higher roles is because of an unexpected vacancy and being in the right place at the right time to step in. And I see this as a a carryover of that data, that
right.
the vice president was in the right place at the right time, and that also that the party came around her to support her so quickly, where there were a lot of rumblings. I even heard that there were some folks who were making some calls to some delegates early on, just to kind of test the waters to see if there was appetite.
Yeah.
So I think there is. It is an anomaly of a situation, but it could have been much more arduous and much more drawn out than it was, which I think is what women of color, because of the question, women in general, women of color specifically, the question of, are they electable? Are they competent? Do they have all of the things that it takes, even though they have, resumes as long as your arm? They need that extra boost to overcome the racism, sexism, and misogyny that is so prevalent in our society. So, she did not have to go through the primary process, but because of, who we are as a country, it makes it very, very difficult to survive that process.
Right, right. Caitlin, it was a great question. I'm glad you called and asked it. Let's go next to Anka in Royal Oak. Anka, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen. Ellie's not there anymore, but Cassie, thank you for participating and being on Created Equal. I agree with Caitlin, and we've certainly seen women in red states as well as blue that have electable values of their constituency, all right? But I think in general, they still need the male nod that we have as far as with our patriarchy. I'm happier than many of my peers. I'm a trans woman here, and for having Kamala as president, as our presidential candidate, but I have been in discussion with other people, especially young people on social media, that aren't so happy with her. And this comes to my question and also comment. There's a disaffection of youth, all right, and that spreads over, across gender, obviously.
Sure.
My idea is that we have mentioned that experience is a good thing, and how do we get people with experience? But it can also be a double-edged sword. It can be useful, but then, you know, you can have people that have been beholden and corrupted by their experience, like how Sophia Nelson talked about the changes in J.D. Vance. Mm-hmm. Now, I love Walt and his support of women. And the masculine argument can be made that I think, though, that males are the source of much of the world's ills that aren't natural. What is being done to bring young women with vision into politics?
Yeah.
And I don't want to see another Boebert, another Green, another Palin, another Murkowski, another Gabbard, or another Williamson.
Anka, I really appreciate that question, and it's a really good one. I think when you're talking about presidential politics, it's often hard to think of youth as being an advantage. I mean, that's worked for a couple of people in that realm, but historically, it is older people with some experience who get the nod. But I get where you're going. That all of this should lead to more young women raising their hands and getting involved in politics at other levels to get to that higher level. Kimberly Peeler Allen, I'll give you the first crack at answering, Anka. What does this look like, I guess, at the other end, where you're starting out and maybe getting younger candidates to test the waters?
Well, we're definitely seeing younger people get engaged, you know, precisely because they are disaffected with the older folks who have the steering wheel. So I think there are many avenues where people are getting engaged. We're seeing a lot of younger people running for local office, for their town council, for school board, for lower office, just to start the process of getting into the political realm. Folks working on campaigns and also looking at state legislatures as an opportunity, as an entry point to bring fresh ideas, to bring new perspective, and to bring a new generation into the electoral process. So there are many groups across the country that are working to get younger people elected. One that definitely comes to mind is Run for Something, where they only work with people who are under the age of 35 running for their first race in local office.
Yeah.
And they are doing phenomenal work all across the country to support, train, and build a robust pipeline that can work its way through the system and continue to change and evolve the body politic.
Yeah. Kathy, we've only got about a minute left, but I'm curious about your sense of what's happening with younger women raising their hands to get involved in politics and, of course, being more involved in the political process.
Yeah, I agree with Kimberly. There's a lot of really great organizations, working to recruit and train young people and trying to get them more involved in the political process. I think it does come down to a lot of it comes down to responsiveness, right? Are young people feeling like government is responsive to their concerns and their needs? And when they don't feel that, oftentimes their answer is to disengage, right? And I think a lot of young people are stereotyped as not caring about issues. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times our young people, right, we have like some of the most educated young generations in history, and they do care about issues, right? And, I know we don't have time, but I will just say that the uncommitted movement in Michigan specifically, right, like I wish we had a little bit more time to talk about that, because I think it's such an important constituency that brings together progressives and young voters and Arab American voters, right? People who are so important to winning Michigan.
Yeah.
And I just hope that, Harris kind of is able to speak to that constituency a little more as well, because I think that can help too.
Kathy Weininger and Kimberly Peeler Allen, great to have both of you here with us on Created Equal to talk about this. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Remember, the WDET Listener Survey is back. What do you think of Created Equal? What do you think of the other programming you hear on 101.9? Let us know at WDET.org/survey. Created Equal is a production of WDET, which is a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.